What is intelligence? Human beings are considered to be intelligent creatures. We talk about smart people, educated people, intelligent people. But as often is the case, we use a word without really defining the axioms, the assumptions. What does that word really mean? Well, what is intelligence? What exactly is intelligence? Is it IQ? We call the intelligent quotient. Is it EQ? The emotional quotient, emotional intelligence versus intellectual intelligence. Is it book smart? Is it street smart? Common sense? You have geniuses that are brilliant, but something's lacking. And is intelligence really about how powerful your mind is? Is that really intelligence? Or is there something more to it? Please join me. This vital discussion, because it affects each one of us and all of us. It affects our academia, our universities, our minds, how we're educated. So please join me in this discussion. What is intelligence? IQ versus EQ. Hi, this is Simon Jacobson, and we will be speaking about what is intelligence, IQ versus EQ. This program is dedicated in honor of Helena Podziba. Very often, there are words that we use in our language that we just assume that we use that word, it means something to us, and we think everybody means the same thing. That's not the case. I mean, you see this in every legal document. They always begin with the terms. What are the terms we're using to make sure that there's no disagreement on the terms? Because you can use a word and you mean one thing and I mean something else. One of my favorite terms in context of God, the very word God, what does that mean? So one of the great mystics said, put it this way, he told a self-proclaimed atheist, he said, the God you don't believe in, I don't believe in either. So first we have to define a word before we agree or disagree about it. So the word intelligence, what does it mean? We talk about it with admiration, an intelligent person, an intelligent idea. We talk today about AI, artificial intelligence. What does it mean? Is it a smart person? And when you say smart, what does smart mean? Does that mean a brilliant mind? A deep mind? Someone that can explain things well? Someone that can understand and grasps things well and quickly? Some people grasp things in time and they can understand it very well, but you have to give them time. Is it intellectual IQ? What we call IQ is the acronym for intellectual quotient. You can be very intellectually brilliant, but lacking emotional intelligence, EQ. There are book smart people, but they're lacking common sense, street smart. So, you see, there are so many options. So, I understand in the common language and our common slang and our common conversations, we say intelligent, we pretty much agree that overall an intelligent person, or that was an intelligent idea. But to really appreciate it, we really need to break it down into understanding it in simple English without using that word even. A good conundrum, an intelligent conundrum maybe, is intelligence intelligent? Is logic logical? We know that every idea has to have axioms, has to have givens. Are the axioms themselves provable? Well, the famous mathematician Gödel showed that even though mathematics was considered the absolute science, everything provable, that no, some assumptions and givens are not, you can't prove. That doesn't mean they're irrational, but they're not always rational in the sense that you came to it through a rational proof or rational empirical evidence and so on. So that just makes the plot thicken. So what I'm going to share may surprise you because it takes into account a much more holistic approach to the concept of intelligence. So to talk about it purely biologically, anatomically, we know there's a brain inside your head, inside your skull, and that brain has the capacity to analyze, to process, to evaluate, to intuit, and to logically try to understand things. It's a complex brain, many, many trillions of neurons at work. It combines both information and experience. And many of our other things that we gather through life, including our emotions, to try to make healthy decisions. But the mind is a complex entity. Besides the fact that we have our biases and our prejudices, even were it to be a situation where you can look at an almost clear objective reality, there are many factors. Two people may see an objective reality differently based on their experiences, not necessarily based on bias, but just based on their own perspective on things. That's why you have different theories. But what exactly is intelligence? And we always contrast it with emotions. Intelligence, healthy intelligence, is reflecting, objectively reflecting on a given situation without preconceived conclusions, without prejudice, without bias. Emotions, on the other hand, we would call more impulsive reactions. I'm attracted to something, I'm repelled by it, I love it, I hate it. Those emotions can either be natural instincts, just like, for example, we're afraid of fire or danger, or they can be a result of an intellectual process, where after research and after due diligence, your mind tells you this seems to be something worth exploring. It could be a date, it could be a business proposal. And then your emotions can get more involved to seeing whether the mind can tell you this is very good, but you can decide it's not for me. It's good on paper. So in a healthy human being, most of us would agree, I say most of us because I don't want to speak for everybody, most of us could agree that the healthy picture of things, unless we're not talking about emergencies or danger, is that you let your mind explore. You let your mind be the detective, do the research work, and come back to you and say, I've read about it, I researched it, I interviewed, I looked at all the pros and cons, and here's what I've come to, here are my results. And then allow the emotions to take over and say, now it's worthwhile entering into some relationship with this entity or individual. And that way you have the mind guiding, offering some type of objective perspective, and the emotions experiencing. A mind without emotions, without a heart, would be a machine. Emotions without a mind can be misguided, directionless, like without a rudder. You need the captain of the ship, the mind, and you need the ship. That's a true, full experience. And they speak to each other. Now, of course, you have situations where the emotions can tell the mind all kinds of things, and then the mind, in its subjective bias and self-interest, can come up with all kinds of explanations and justifications for something that is completely emotionally driven by some interest. which is why an objective judge or objective party would have to recuse themselves if they're honest. But part of being subjective, sometimes you're not honest. You try to cover up and you try to use the mind. And the smarter you are, the more you can cover up and find and cover your tracks, as we say. And that's the reverse. That's when the emotions are affecting the mind. Then there's the mind affecting the emotions, as we've discussed. But we still haven't discussed what is intelligence. So the truth is, we have to really discuss what is life, what is a human being. If we are the selfish gene, in Richard Dawkins' terms, pursuing our cardinal rule is the survival of the fittest, to fulfill my need to perpetuate myself, and to do so in the most efficient way. So then you can say intelligence is one of the tools that a human being evolved into that helps them do exactly that, to survive, to exist, to hunt, to negotiate, to maneuver and navigate life. The emotions is where it plays itself out. That really drives the self-interest, my interest. But the mind is a tool, a tremendous tool. And that tool itself can build tools. As we've done, we've built instruments and tools and technologies. And what is it all driven by? Life itself, what life wants. Self-preservation, self-perpetuation. However, if life is defined by, we'll call it transcendence, seeking something greater than yourself, then intelligence takes on a whole different meaning. Intelligence is not to figure out, like an animal in the wild, where I can find my prey, where can I find a nest to protect my young, how can I perpetuate my life, how can I build my clan, or my group, or my whatever it's called. But then intelligence is part of the process of transcendence. So let me submit this definition of intelligence. Intelligence is not about smartness. It's not about understanding things. It's part of it. It's about experiencing a reality greater than yourself. The emotions cannot do that because they're defined by self. It's all about, what do I feel? Do I like this? Don't I like it? Am I drawn to it? Am I not drawn to it? So it's not going outside of yourself. It's actually seeing whether this belongs to me, whether this is something I want to acquire and belong to me. The mind has the power to explore, to imagine, to dream, to go to places that are far beyond your subjective interests, to climb the mountain and look at broader horizons. And then, even then, to go beyond that and say, what else is out there? The curiosity of seeking that which is beyond our limited parameters. It's a very different definition of intelligence. So then intelligence has a component which is evaluation, analysis, probing, research, arguments, meaning argument pros and cons, counter-arguments, stretching an idea in every direction, with the goal of what? Seeking something what we call is a higher truth. And that higher truth can then inform our subjective realities. And that is indeed how the mystics explain intelligence. To use Kabbalistic terminology, that there are 10 conscious faculties broken down into two categories, three cognitive faculties and 7 emotional ones. Just quickly going through them, which is not really the topic, but for the record, the 3 cognitive conscious ones are called Chachma, Bina, Das, sometimes translated wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. But I think a better translation may be conceiving, comprehending, and concluding, or connecting to the idea. The 7 emotions are love, discipline, empathy, or balance, harmony, endurance or determination, yielding, flexibility, bonding, and finally dignity. Chesed, Gvura, Teferes, Netzach, Chayid, Yesod, Malchus. Conscious faculties. But where does consciousness come from? A while back, I had a series, multi-part series, How Consciousness is Born. It definitely complements this discussion here. You could find it at our site, meaningfullife.com, How Consciousness is Born. So how consciousness, indeed, how is it born? Where does that chachma, where does that spark of an idea, the conception, that first flash come from? Some call it the collective unconscious, some call it the subconscious. I call it the superconscious. In the Kabbalistic terminology, chachma, revealed conscious wisdom, comes from superconscious wisdom, which is hidden. Think of it like the reservoir. The faucet is allowing a drop of water to enter into your home, to your sink, into your life. But where is that water, that drop coming from? From pipes that connect to arteries, that connect to a water main, which connect to the reservoirs. So here too, there is a invisible. It's invisible, meaning it's not just not visible to the eye. We're not conscious of it. It's beyond conscious. But it's nevertheless there. So intelligence is actually the channeling of a superconscious higher reality, higher truth, into our conscious reality. That would be the more, if I can call it, scientific definition. We'll call it the mystical scientific definition. So when you say someone has a lot of brain power, someone is smart, so they may be very good at analytics and the cerebral part of it, perhaps good at breaking down a subject in many details, asking the right questions, understanding which data is relevant and which is not, listening to all the pros and cons and arguments, crystallizing the concept. But what is ultimately happening, it's all a process of drawing from a higher reality, a higher superconscious reality, which is called, in the Hebrew, the Chochmah Stima of the world of Keser, the crown, is sometimes the name used for it. Within that, the Chochmah Stima, the superconscious intelligence, and that too has levels, they're superconscious, superconscious, that I discussed in that previous series I mentioned, all leading into the conscious. So it's about experiencing a higher reality. And therefore, objectivity is not just important not to make mistakes or not to forge and distort intentionally or not intentionally the conclusions to serve your interest. It's much deeper than that. It's to actually experience a true higher reality. In other words, it's not that I understand it, it's that the idea is being channeled inside of me. That higher truth is not me understanding it, it's me absorbing it. So the me is moved aside. This is about a higher reality manifesting within yourself. And that's why this is just a distortion based on, I guess, societal interests, where we overrate the mind and think, oh, if somebody is an excellent chess player, that means they're the smartest person on earth. Or a genius in another area. They're a genius in the area that they are strong in, but they could be lacking so much about experiencing something higher than themselves. That's why EQ is just as important, if not more important, than IQ. Because you can be smart on paper, but that's smart with another person. You could say all the right things, but offend everyone around you. A relationship with another person is not just saying unfiltered truths, it's knowing how to say it. We're not talking about distorting or lying or deceiving, but how to say it, in a sensitive way. Is it a sensitive way? Is empathy not a form of intelligence? So you see a far more holistic and broader picture, all based on the fact we're not separating and breaking down the anatomy of the brain versus the heart, the mind versus emotions. It's all part of an experience of something greater. And the mind can take you there because of its natural objective nature, where it's detached initially from any foregone conclusions that it can explore independently. It's like taking an independent auditor and check it out. Come back to me with results. I don't want you to have any interest involved. I don't want you to have any vested interest. That's how you experience a higher reality. If not, it'll always be an experience of yourself, just an extension of yourself and your interests. So then the mind becomes an instrument, a tool of transcendence. And a tremendous tool. Because emotions can experience transcendence, but they cannot do the exploration because they, by definition, have a vested interest. That's an emotion. That's what an emotion is about. So it's actually a fascinating journey or experience from the ultra-transcendent into the immanent, from the super-conscious into the conscious, first in the conscious mind, then into the conscious emotions that defines the ultimate and most beautiful, powerful, and I would even say eternal experiences in life. So love, loving another, is a combination of all of that, a healthy love for another, not a crush, not an infatuation, not an instant gratification, momentary rush. A sustainable, long-term love is very transcendent. You're going outside of yourself and loving another person. But how do you know whom to love? That's why you need the mind. The mind has to explore. Check things out. Personality. Look for red flags, skeletons. I'm not talking about how deep one should go and how far, because you can also destroy anything if you pick it apart. Nobody is perfect. We're not looking about perfection. We're talking about, do you have a trustworthy partner? Do you have someone that you can relate to? This is far more than just pure raw emotions. It's also far more than just pure intelligence. It's a combination. So the ultimate goal is the transcendence, getting something, experiencing a reality higher than ourselves. The tools go through the conscious cognitive and the conscious emotions as they speak to each other. So when you think of it that way, it's a whole different take on the human being. Why we're here, what our purpose is, and what we should be using our minds for. Most people you ask, you go to school, education, hopefully get a good education, get yourself into a good university or college, and then find a study something that will give you a good profession that will make good money. Medicine, law, accounting, science, computer science, just throwing out some random. There's no bias in any of those that I just mentioned. So what is the driving force of it all? Ultimately, it's really security. Building a secure income, being able to build, expand, and do what you want to do in your life, whatever it may be. Hopefully including building a family. The intelligent part of it is I need to study. I can't be a doctor without knowing studying medicine. I can't be an attorney without studying law. Same thing with technology and all the other schools of thought. So intelligence there is about mastering a particular field, whether it's in the physical sciences, in the political sciences, or in the social sciences. Now, does it include, of course, the pleasure of intellectualism, the pleasure of understanding something? Absolutely. Solving a problem. Especially a problem others haven't solved. Understanding something thoroughly. Being able to help people in that process. But you see, none of this is driven initially by purely transcendence of a higher experience beyond yourself. Push comes to shove, some people will say that's the case. That's really what it's about. But that's where I would begin. It's all about experiencing something greater than yourself, which includes serving and helping other people. It could be through medicine or through a law, through other means. And then intelligence is a tool of that. It's not just understanding the field that you're learning. But we're not dismissing here understanding, comprehending. We're not dismissing the conscious capacity of conceiving, developing, and coming to proper conclusions of a particular idea. Just as we're not negating the importance of the emotional dimension. It's just putting it into a bigger context. that we're seeking something greater than ourselves, and we want to bring that, make that part of our lives. The mystics put it, to integrate transcendence with immanence, and ultimately to integrate a third dimension that's beyond transcendent and immanent, and therefore you can create a seamless fusion of both. Purpose of life. And it all comes together. That, therefore, you also don't have that concept, that very concept in the academic world of compartmentalization. Some say it's urban legend, but they say in the name of Bertrand Russell, the philosopher, he once behaved unethically with this, with one of his students. So the Board of Ethics came, called him in, and summoned him and said to him, "Professor Russell, you're a professor of ethics. How could you behave so unethically?" And he said, "I also teach mathematics, and I'm not a triangle." The classic academic actually said with pride, "That why are you talking to me about my behavior? It has nothing to do with my teachings. What I am is not what I teach, and what I teach is not necessarily what I am." Contrast that with Maimonides, the Rambam, and he says, "Who is a wise person?" His answer is not who is the intelligent person. His answer is not brain power, IQ. His answer is not oratory skills, argument, the ability to argue and debate, the ability to make a strong case for something. He says, "You want to know who's the intelligent, the wise person? Look at how they walk, how they talk, how they eat, how they drink, how they sleep, how they treat others, how they behave. Are any of us behavior is completely aligned with our ideologies? Obviously not. Just being the very fact that we have an ideal means it's an ideal often that we have not yet reached. But we aspire for it. And we definitely don't deify the compartmentalization. We say, I'm not there yet. Now that's only possible when you see intelligence not as an end in itself, but as part of transcendent experience of something greater than myself. Then I want to make sure that my behavior is aligned with that. It's not just some compartmentalist thing that I say, okay, I'm a smart guy, but the rest of my life is decadent and so on." That's why you can find so easily today in academic circles, including on campuses, such a dichotomy. Paradox. On one hand, it's supposed to be a bastion, a tower of wisdom, of objectivity, and yet you see how it can be abused and misused and exploited by all kinds of hateful elements with agendas, whether it's anti-Semitic agendas or anti-Israel or other anti-minority. Everything can be justified. The Nazis used science and medicine and technology to kill because it was not part of a holistic picture of understanding the need for the humility which is required in the experience of something greater than yourself. And that is the final point I want to make about wisdom and intelligence. Take out humility from wisdom and intelligence. That doesn't mean you're not an intelligent person, but you can't be trusted. Because intelligence and arrogance are a lethal mix, where the arrogance can distort, you can justify, you're not answering to anything greater than yourself, you're not accountable. That's why humility is not just, okay, a nice feature. It actually contributes to the ability to open up the channel between consciousness and superconsciousness. Because you're getting your ego aside. And that hard work required to do that all opens up those channels. Get yourself out of the way and allow a deeper truth to channel through you, not the other way around. Now, of course, we all have egos, and we'd like to be honored and rewarded for our work and our investment, including our intelligence. But that cannot be the end. That's a side benefit. We should always acknowledge someone's contributions. It's about experiencing something beyond ourselves and then bringing it into the conscious intelligence and emotions of our lives. Now, some of this may sound very abstract, but it really comes down to and impacts even events in the world today. If we could get people who are fighting with each other at war at the table and discuss this, in a civil way. And even here, disagreements, but all done with civility, with kindness, with sensitivity, would we not have a better world? So I would submit that science and intelligence itself and philosophy, that has been hijacked. It's been hijacked by egos. Actually can contribute to more problems than solve. I'm not suggesting not to use intelligence, but don't worship intelligence. It's only a means. It's a tool. It's an instrument. It's the instrument to experience transcendence in our lives. And the litmus test is very clear. Does it create more coexistence? Does it create more tolerance? Does it create more harmony? More synergy and cross-pollination of discovering the harmony within diversity? Absolutely is my response. It could and should, and that's what it's meant for. May we embrace deeper meanings of what the word intelligence means and see how that becomes integrated, the IQ with the EQ, all in the search for the higher presence in our lives, manifesting that in our personal, interpersonal relationships, and by extension, to our communities, our cities, our countries, and our entire universe. Thank you so much. This has been Simon Jacobson, MeaningfulLife.com. You can check out this and so many other programs. If you've liked what you've heard, please share with others. Please subscribe to our growing YouTube channel. Subscribe to our weekly offerings by email. We're on all the social media platforms. And then please also share your thoughts, your comments, your feedback. Be blessed and be well. Thank you.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.